I'm George Kittle.
What's up? It's Brock Purdy.
And you're listening to the Niner Guys.
The Niner Guys. Woo!
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Niner Guys. Todd Kleinheim, alongside Jerry Sue. We are after week one. A very impressive week one for the 49ers. A lot to get into with them. A lot to get into around the league. We're going to be quarterback heavy because when Jimmy Garoppolo wins his opener and other quarterbacks flame out, get hurt, or excel, that kind of leads all the storylines for these teams. But the quarterback we're going to talk about first, Brock Purdy. There were some questions by some about, is Brock Purdy the man? What's he have to do to be the man? Is he the franchise guy? Is he the real deal, like Kyle proclaimed a month ago? After week one, Jerry, your thoughts on Brock Purdy?
Definitely a relief to see Brock back in action in a real game and didn't seem fazed by his elbow or anything. You know, despite all the picks we heard about him throwing in those training camp practices, Purdy played an exceptionally clean game when it counted on Sunday. I mean, he made Patrick Peterson eat his words about having tells that were going to lead to interceptions, with both of his touchdowns coming against Peterson. But, you know, I think it's the poise, you know, and the instinct that the kid plays with that just amazes me. I mean, you could argue that one of his best plays was when he got strip sacked and then had the awareness to find the ball behind his butt and quickly get both hands on it to retain possession. You know, and like you said, as much as we tease Kyle for calling Brock the real deal, I don't think you can argue with the fact that Purdy's the first quarterback in NFL history, I think they're saying, that to win each of his first six regular season starts, to throw for at least two touchdowns in each of those starts, and to have a passer rating of 95 or higher in those starts. Just a phenomenal beginning to this man's, you know, young career, budding career, and just hopefully cross our fingers that we are truly seeing the next great 49ers quarterback and that he stays healthy, because as we've seen, which we'll talk later about, you know, another quarterback that has ties to the Bay Area, you know, things can change on a dime. So let's cross our fingers that Brock can stay healthy.
So the Niners end up winning 30-7, which was the largest home loss in the Tomlin era. And you talked about Purdy, what he did statistically in terms of etching his name into some historic, I don't know, record books, or at least, you know, areas. First quarterback to win his first six starts and throw two touchdowns and have a pass rating 95 or higher. So let me ask you, is he the real deal now? Or if he's not, what more do you need to see from him to say he's our franchise quarterback?
Depends how you want to define real deal. Do you want to define him real deal like, is he Patrick Mahomes? No, he's not Patrick Mahomes. But is he real deal like him and Kyle Shanahan could be this generation's Montana and Walsh, in terms of the kid might not have all the physical tools in the bag, but he has all the intangibles, and the marriage between player and coach is just so, you know, harmonious that they just do a lot of winning together. I would say yes to that latter. So if that is your definition of real deal, then absolutely. I mean, I think the only thing that if you really want to quibble about it is, well, they haven't won a Super Bowl together, right? And there's still parts of his game that you're wondering, well, if, again, yes, they had TJ Watt, who looked really good, but nobody else on that defense necessarily, especially after Cam Hayward went out, really put a whole lot of pressure on that offense. So, like, if he had to face the Cowboys defense, for example, as we saw in last year's playoff game, seemed to give him some trouble. So if he goes up against a team that where he needs to have more bags and more clubs in the bag, shall we say, right? Like, where he has to take those deep shots downfield. Will he be exposed? I don't know, but so far so good, right? I mean, he puts the ball where it needs to be. He's instinctive enough to get around the rush where you know, it's funny, like for some of these games that we watch with these other quarterbacks, you just see how frenetic they play and you get nervous. Last night, when we were watching the Jets-Bills game, once Aaron Rodgers went out, every pass Zach Wilson would throw, or even some that Josh Allen would throw, you could see Peyton Manning going, oh my God, oh God, okay, it's completed. You don't feel that way, right? You don't feel that way with Brock Purdy. In fact, you brought up Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, how often did we feel that way when Jimmy was the quarterback here? And I'm sure Kyle Shanahan felt the same way, which is why, yes, they did a lot of winning while he was here. But at the same time, I think Kyle was nervous every step of the way. So it didn't take long for him to start always sort of looking over, you know, at other options, shall we say.
And it's not just Niner fans that are either confirming that they believe Brock Purdy is the real deal and the franchise quarterback, whatever moniker you want to put on it. Micah Parsons, new to the podcast world, Micah Parsons, I should say, was on his podcast. He had a podcast today and brought up the fact that he thinks Brock Purdy is essentially underrated, that people should be standing up to take notice of what he's doing, that he believes he's a top 15 quarterback right now. So if that's the case, I got to think this is going to at least give anyone who was really concerned about Brock Purdy, not so much about Brock Purdy's elbow, like can he physically come back, but just him overall as a quarterback, this has to at least provide some relief. Now, it's not going to provide relief to everybody. There's still going to be people who won't give him credit or won't, you know, believe in him until he hoists the Lombardi trophy type of thing. But winning in the NFL is hard. Winning a Super Bowl is hard. And if Brock Purdy can continue to perform like he has been, I think you're right. Him and the marriage with Kyle and what they do and his intangibles, they're going to do a lot of winning and they're going to put themselves in the conversation to go deep into the playoffs and to get to the Super Bowl, win a Super Bowl, whatever. We know how difficult that is. And what you want is your team to be in first, get into the tournament, like they say. And then are you a team that can go deep? Do you have enough positive weapons, positive attributes to your team, whether it's head coach, coordinator, specific player groupings, whatever, to get in there? And I think Brock Purdy has that. So I was thrilled to see. It didn't seem like he had any lingering effects from the elbow injury. He moved around great. You know, we picked up, you know, a couple first downs when it was needed. It's really the things that seem to be so basic. Just finds the open man, you know, keeps his eyes downfield, the scramble where he, you know, reversed out of the pocket and hit Debo. Just, again, keeping his eyes downfield. All those things that almost seem like, duh, every quarterback should be able to do that. And you mentioned Zach Wilson. Just clearly not every quarterback has that. You know, clearly there are quarterbacks that, you know, struggle with the most basic things, the layups. They might we're going to get into – when we spin around the NFL, some of the hype that we believed in, that we, you know, bought, and some of the hype that we believed in that clearly went wrong. One of the things that was going to mention is Justin Fields. People were talking about he's an MVP candidate. You know, he's got weapons on Chicago. He looked terrible. Like, and I sold the hype for the long time that Justin Fields was going to be this guy. And so I feel like after week one, I was validated that he's just struggling with such the simple concepts of playing quarterback. Nobody questions his 40 time, his arm strength, his athletic ability, but everything that Brock Purdy has that can't be quantified seemingly in terms of reading the defense, keeping his eyes downfield, is what Justin Fields struggles at. And it's probably why, along with a, you know, very different rosters, it's why the Niners haven't lost, you know, a game that Brock started and completed. And the Bears have struggled so much in the past year in a game, you know, with Justin Fields.
Well, to be fair, Justin Fields did throw a couple of touchdowns. One just happened to be to the Packers. So, you know, no, but seriously, I mean, again, to be fair, honestly, to Justin Fields. And in comparison to Brock Purdy, one thing we haven't seen, or we won't see necessarily, is that, let's be honest, Fields doesn't have the kind of supporting cast that Brock Purdy has. So we're not really necessarily going to be able to judge Purdy from the standpoint of, well, what would he be like if he had the same teammates as Justin Fields, right? I mean, dude, he's got Brandon Ayuk, he's got Debo, he's got McCaffrey. I mean, he's just got a wealth of talent around him. So that's another thing where it's like, is he the real deal? He sure looks like it, but then on the other hand, look who he's playing with, right? I mean, I think there was this grid I saw where it's like, the Niners have the highest paid, bing, 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 like, you know, tight end, fullback, you know, and all this stuff. It's like tackle, defensive end, linebacker. So, I mean, it is a star-studded cast of guys that he's playing with. So, and that's why the idea of, is he the real deal? I mean, sure seems like it right now. And again, I think one of the questions I had was, would the league catch up to his tendencies? Like, which, you know, they always say, right, like as a pitcher, after you go around so many, or even not a pitcher, even pitcher or hitter, going around a few, you know, a few starts, a few whatnot, the league will start getting a book on you. They'll know your tendencies. So what's going to be your changeup? How are you going to combat what they have figured out about you? And so, I don't know, maybe with Kyle, he'll never have to see it. You know, maybe they're, the two of them together are just that good. I don't know yet. It's been one game. He looked phenomenal. But it was probably, to me, the hardest game on the schedule for the first 3-4 weeks. So, you know, so I feel like he passed a big test. And I think for me, the amazing thing is just, you know, like we're just talking about how some quarterbacks have it, some of quarterbacks don't. It's just how he's able to play as well as he has, despite the speed of the game. Like you don't even think when he's quarterbacking that, wow, this game's faster than it is in college. Because it's like he's better in the pros than he was in college. It's the reason why he was drafted last. Because, I mean, as much as, like, I remember seeing him as a freshman going, oh, look at this guy. And honestly, I remember noticing him only because our friend Jeff Kropinski's from Arizona, and he was this big-time quarterback coming out of high school from Arizona, and he was a freshman. But then over the course of the next 4 years, it didn't seem like he really took that huge step, like, you know what I mean, where he was in the conversation for the Heisman or whatnot. You always talk about, oh, why does, you know, if he's so good, maybe Alabama would want him in like the portal or if transfer, right? It wasn't like that. So, and maybe it benefited the Niners because he didn't have a great senior year. So therefore he slid. And like I said, I mean, and to me, and I'm not going to compare him to like a Steph Curry because that's not fair, but just from the standpoint of his aura and the joy that he plays with, right? Like that scramble that he had, the first down, that smile, that boyish, like you'd think he's just this little kid, but he's this like silent assassin, right? Yeah. I think like he has that kind of Steph Curry, like you think I'm this, you know, slight guy, nice guy. I'm a killer and I will gut you.
One of the things, and it's quickly, something off of the quarterback, we buried the lead. That was the biggest question mark last time we got together for the podcast was, is Nicky Bosa going to have a uniform? Is he going to be in Pittsburgh? How much is he digging his heels in? Well, the Niners and Nick got everything situated on Wednesday, I believe.
Of course, the day after we recorded our podcast.
Yeah. So, you know, he showed up, he got a walkthrough, he got a practice, he was on the plane. Didn't record a sack, but his simple presence allowed the Niners to accumulate 5 sacks. So talk to me about the defensive side of the ball, specifically anything that stood out to you, or I know one of the concerns I had or concern things I wanted to see was how is coordinator Steve Wilks going to run this defense? Is he going to take all these incredible ingredients that he's already had and kind of stick with it? Is he going to put his own stamp on it? We know Steve Wilks is known as a blitzing, you know, coordinator. Are they going to do new things? Hard to say because they jumped out to such a big lead. In fact, the blitz rate in the first quarter was 57%, which sounds like, wow, you're blitzing a lot. Yeah, but they only had 7 plays. It was four blitzes in 7 plays. The rest of the game, they only blitzed 15%, which might sound low, but then again, you're up 25, 23 points. So it's like, you know, we're not playing for the takeaway. We're playing for tackle the guy, burn clock, like, let's get through. So I don't think we truly know what kind of full game plan Steve Wilkes is going to have. But talk to me about the defense, your joy that you had to have when you heard Nick Bosa signed, and then what you saw overall from the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm a big enough man, Todd, to admit when I'm wrong. And I couldn't be happier to have been so wrong about the Niners in week one, because, you know, I fully expected the Niners to struggle against what was supposed to be a formidable Steelers team, playing on the road, having that early game time in Pittsburgh, you know, with all this uncertainty surrounding not only Nick Bosa, but also Jake Moody hanging over the team. And, you know, we don't necessarily start fast during the early parts of the season, but once Bosa signed his extension, I mean, it seemed as though the dark clouds parted and everything was right again. And they just used all that positive energy and momentum to crush the Steelers. We talked about Brock Purdy just being the real deal. Brandon Ayuk busted out for 2 touchdowns and 129 yards and some supreme blocking that sprung Christian McCaffrey for his big 65-yard touchdown. And you want to know how I felt about Steve Wilkes? I love the fact that you probably would not even have known that we had a new defensive coordinator if you didn't know that Steve Wilkes got hired. If you just woke up and it's like, oh, is it football season already? Because the defense just kept on humming. And I actually didn't realize that they blitzed so much early on. Granted, it was only a few plays. But just the fact that, like, I mean, the defense played shut down D so much, so often. I think Trent Williams actually, in a joking way, complained. He's like, I actually hope that the Steelers could get a first down here because I'm tired. Yeah. I have to be on the field. Like what? What? You're off the field already? I got to get back on the field? So, yeah, I mean, love the fact that the defense was just on top of their game so early, led by Fred Warner, who set the tone with that bone-jarring hit on Najee Harris. You mentioned the 5 sacks led by Drake Jackson with 3 of them. And then, you know, our Pick City secondary came up with 2 interceptions. So I think just in offensively, defensively, and then special teams, Jake Moody, despite Mike Tomlin's weak attempt to rattle the rookie kicker by icing him and then having all his guys jump off sides, Moody was el perfecto. Just like the team in every phase, including the coaching, just an outstanding performance all around, and just, I think, a tone-setting win to start the season.
The one thing that I did notice that Wilkes did that I hadn't seen either D'Amico or Saleh do was he ran with a 5-man defensive line at times. So he pulled the linebacker off and just went with 5 down linemen, which I thought was an interesting way of going about it. It was almost a dare to Kenny Pickett to, you know, throw the ball. Like we got 5 down linemen. These guys are going to control the line of scrimmage and the run game. Can you do anything? Can you beat us? I mean, even if you're trying to, you know, 4, 5, 6 yards just to move the ball a little bit. And the 5-man line continued to bring pressure. Pickett was certainly not the preseason Pickett that all the people in Pittsburgh thought he was going to be. So, yeah, I think there were, again, we're week one, but are some questions answered that could be changed? Sure. Who's going to rush the quarterback opposite Nick Bosa? Well, Drake Jackson got first crack at it and did his job. Eric Armstead and Nick Bosa are taking up 2 and 3 guys between them, leaving Drake Jackson one-on-one. He produced 3 sacks, including his second sack, which was essentially just a hustle sack, just kept the motor going and tripped up Pickett. So I think you got a reasonable showing of, yeah, Drake Jackson can rush the passer. Like he's, if he's not accounted for with at least, you know, the offensive tackle and someone either chipping him or keeping an eye on him, he can win his one-on-one battles, and he's athletic enough to get out and run down a quarterback or hold the edge and run down the running back. So I think the answer of Drake Jackson being a guy who can rush the passer was nice. I thought Armstead played really well. You mentioned Fred Warner. Fred could have had a pick six. He had a ball that hit him between the 5 and the 4 with no one in front of him. And it just, you know, it's probably why he's a linebacker, not a tight end. Cause
it wasn't that right to him. It was sort of at his hip. and he sort of took his eyes off. But yes, that was one of the low lights, if you want to go there.
Well, it certainly wasn't the, you know, I mean,
what could have been.
Right? What could have been a 30-7, you know, gosh, just dominating performance could have been even bigger had you know, things like that gone his way.
Had he held on to the ball, had they not had the little lapse at the end of the first half. But I just think, you know, what was awesome was that Pickett looked frazzled. The fans already want their OC Matt Canada to be fired. At one point, I think the Niners had 199 yards of offense to the Steelers, 1 yard of offense.
Yep.
And as we've seen from last year, and it sucks for Pittsburgh, but they should just chalk up another L next this coming week, because that's what happens, right? You play the Niners, they pound you into submission, and you barely have enough just to get the team out on the field in the following week, but you lose. So unfortunately for Pittsburgh, it's going to be 0-2 start.
Pittsburgh's going to have a tough game. They play the Browns, who, I don't know, the resurgent Brown or the surprising Browns. We'll get to the Browns and the rest of the league. So, yeah, the Steelers lose their home opener like they did in, you know, embarrassing fashion, considering it was such a lopsided loss. But now they go against a divisional opponent. So they're in for a little bit of a they're in a little bit of a hole right now, and it's not the thing that you want to have to dig out of. What else? Christian McCaffrey looked like the number one offensive weapon in the NFL type of thing. The Niners gave up the late touchdown to end the first half, essentially, and two plays into the second half, McCaffrey goes 65 yards. And I'll tell you, one of the biggest noticeable things that I had, and it was a comparison of Brandon Ayuk de-cleating the safety, you know, that was trying to get to him, and Ray-Ray McCloud coming all the way from the other side of the field to block a guy at the 5 yard line to, you know, basically push Christian into the end zone. That was the difference between the Monday night game when Breece Hall broke what was a 65 yard run. Garrett Wilson is seen in the back putting his finger up like number one. Instead of being Brandon Ayuk or being Raymond and hustling to get the block, because there was only one guy that could catch him. Garrett Wilson's a good enough athlete. He probably could have got there, gotten his way, and it would have been a touchdown. We would have missed all of the excitement of overtime in New York City and all that kind of stuff. But the difference between the Niners, a veteran team who knows we got to sell out for everyone on every play, compared to a young guy who just sees, oh, our running back busted it, we're going to the house. Like that was a big noticeable difference for me. And it's like, Ray-Ray's not going to, you know, nothing is going to be put in the stat sheet of what Ray-Ray did. And all of Ayuk's stats have to do with his catches, his two touchdowns, his beating back. And his de-cleaning was probably the thing that got the biggest, whoa, in the film study room on Monday, right? So I thought both those guys at least deserve a shout out for the hard, dirty work that's not going to go recognized.
Absolutely, absolutely. But my name wouldn't be Jerry Sue if I didn't have at least something to complain about. And despite Kyle Shanahan's vote of confidence in Colton McKivitz, what we saw of his performance on Sunday, I say it's worrisome. I get that not every edge rusher he'll face will be the caliber of TJ Watt. But guess who I'm looking to attack on stunts with Aaron Donald if I'm the Rams this week? So you bet they're going to go try and take advantage of old number 68 on that right side. And, you know, I'm sure Donald will be licking his chops, because guess what? No more Dan Brunskill to neutralize him. And as we all were just talking about the glorious greatness of Brock Purdy, we got to keep him clean and upright. Like, that's the most important thing for the Niners, as far as I'm concerned. Second most important thing, I know we also spoke in glowing terms of the defense, is to be able to generate pressure when Nick Bosa needs a breather.
Yep.
Because when Bosa wasn't on the field, Kyle Pickett was able to get it, you know, get into some rhythm and throw the ball, and that opposing offense was able to actually cut through our defense like butter. So we need to figure something out when Bosa's not on the field, because he can't be on the field all the time.
Agree. Yes, that is something to keep your eye on. Bosa got like what, 31, 32 snaps. I would expect that to go up a little bit, probably into the low 40s against the Rams as he gets, you know, basically this is his training camp. This is him getting hit on the first play of the game was the first time that he's gotten hit, you know, since the Eagles game. So, you know, he's got to build up those calluses essentially to, you know, to be the Nick Bosa that was defensive player of the year. So he'll get there. I have no doubt about it. I mean, like Shanahan said, the day he signed was, unless he comes in with a beer belly, he's not, you know, he won't play. And I don't think he's going to come in with a beer belly. And he didn't. I mean, Nick Bosa looked like the 2% body fat Nick Bosa that we saw all last year. I agree with you about McKivitz. It's, you know, it was the worrisome point of the offensive line. He won't be going against the TJ Watt every time, but I do think there's things that Shanahan can implement, and that might just be, you know, Charlie Warner's got to get some more snaps on the opposite side to create, you know, a little bit more of a slowdown of that pass rusher. Juszczyk might have to stay in a little bit longer, which takes away from Kyle's designed run schemes, because every time there's a running play, three, four guys are crisscrossing type of thing. But on pass plays, he's going to have to do a little bit something to help McKivitz. Now, if they believe in him that he's going to get there, great. But, you know, in the meantime, you got TJ Watt week one. You're going to see Aaron Donald. You know, you're going to see Micah Parsons week five. There are some big boy pass rushers that can change games. They can change the game, and McKivitz has
to kill the quarterback. Don't forget that. They can change games and kill the quarterback.
Yeah. So
avoid the killing of the quarterback.
Right. Anything else? I'll tell you the one thing that I was noticing. Does anybody play closer to the razor's edge thinking there could be a flag on this play more than Dre Greenlaw? Every time that guy seriously, like he plays what's his name? The old safety that the Niners had. Came from Washington, went to Washington.
Sean Goldson?
Sean Goldson. He plays like that. Like he plays such on the razor's edge of, did you tackle him around the neck and head? Did you come in just a little bit late? Did you fall with all, like, again, he plays like that, which makes him so good, because he, you know, he's fast, he's tough. But every now and then I'm looking, is the flag going to come out? Because that was awfully close, Dre.
Yeah. I think it just depends on in the game. I mean, what's good is that he doesn't have a reputation for being dirty, right? So that helps. Because if he were like Vontaze Burfict, he'd be flagged every day, all day, twice on Sunday or more. But yeah, so, and then, you know, it's good. It's good that, again, guys like him and Fred Warner just set the tone with that kind of physicality. So, hey, man, as long as you can get away with it, keep going. I'm sure, depending on the game, if it were like a playoff game and it's a tight situation, you probably would have been called for that. But, you know, game one, week one, refs either let it go or probably missed it.
The only other thing that I made note of, that something to keep an eye on, and that's the nickel situation.
Yes, Isaiah Oliver, also not good.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, but Lenore got pulled, so they had, you know, so he got pulled out and Oliver got put in because Lenore was either, well,
no, because Ambry got hurt.
Well,
and Lenore, Thomas got hurt, right?
He did, yes, but that's what I'm saying. Like Lenore picked up the personal foul and then had to be kicked outside, which brought Isaiah Oliver in, which again, it's
Ambry's tack personal foul, by the way.
Ambry's injury, you know, caused two positions to shift, right? So you're taking out your nickel and kicking them outside, and you gotta bring in a new nickel. So something to keep an eye on. Again, the Rams have a couple receivers who, you know, like to work out of the slot, and it's going to be they're not big receivers. So that's not Isaiah Oliver's forte, is dealing with the Tutu Atwells of the world, the short, quick, you know, receivers. So something to keep an eye on as, you know, as the season progresses, to make sure that they don't get burned by those slot guys, as much as they could if you know, the situation warrants.
Yeah. But like I said, to me, you got to keep Brock Purdy healthy because biggest story of the week, what do we see just last night? Aaron Rodgers. I mean, not necessarily this is because of the fault of the O-line per se, but just how things can change on a dime when your quarterback gets hurt. Aaron Rodgers rupturing his Achilles on the fourth play of the game. I mean, if there is a God, he must hate the Jets more than the devil himself. Because even I felt sorry for the Jets and their fans. But if we know one thing about the NFL script is that it gets crazier and crazier every year. I wouldn't be surprised if after consulting with his doctor, you know, Joe Rogan, Aaron Rodgers will shoot up some ivermectin in his Achilles and come back next week. But barring that, I'll be interested to see what the Jets do in terms of their starting quarterback, because I mean, they have to be looking to acquire someone else, right? I mean, I can't imagine Sala is being sincere about sticking with Zach Wilson.
Yeah, that was a brutal turn of events. Even for, again, I'm not an Aaron Rodgers fan. I respect him as the quarterback and what he's done. I do like Robert Saleh. The Jets were on Hard Knocks. So, you know, you can't help but, you know, have a soft spot for the Xavier Gibson, undrafted free agent that you see all through training camp, who's working his butt off and gets a shot. And then in game one returns a punt to win the game. But I'm not a Jets fan, but the Jets fan, and I was talking to someone after the game and I said, what I feel bad for is, yeah, I kind of feel bad for Aaron Rodgers, but you know, you're a 40-year-old, you're out there like, ask Kevin Durant, ask Klay Thompson, like these things happen, you know, and when you're an elite athlete, injuries happen. But I feel bad because there are, you know, 10, 12, 14-year-old kids who are huge Jets fans, and this was gonna be their shining light of a season. They got their Hall of Fame quarterback. They got all the pieces. And
they bought the Rodgers jerseys.
They got the Rodgers. And four plays into it, it devastating. Done. Just crushing. Like, it was hard for me to come up with a comp in terms of injury. I know Tom Brady got hurt in the first game in Kansas City one time where he blew out his knee, which, you know, through – a wrench into the Patriots, but to have a guy come in as the savior week and not even week one, four plays and just have it just turned over was that had to be crushing to so many, you know, Jets fans who were sitting there on their front of their TVs watching them play the Bills. And I agree with you. Like, I don't believe they can stick with Zach Wilson. So let me ask you, where do they go? Instantly, you heard Joe Flacco. Do they make a call to Tom Brady? Do they call the Niners and check on Sam Darnold? Like, where do the Jets go? And what do they do? Obviously, they're without a lot of draft capital after the trade, but they were in this. We're going for the Super Bowl, even though they weren't kind of a favorite. We're going for it. That's why we brought in Aaron Rodgers. We have all these other pieces. So where do they go? What do you think?
Well, despite him being a, you know, former Patriot, I do think the Jets fans would love to see Tom Brady try to make another comeback. And it would certainly be interesting. But I also think that he seems to be enjoying his time with his kids. He's now part owner of the Raiders, and the Patriots just held a ceremony honoring Brady during halftime of New England season opener. So I don't know. I think it'd be super awkward if he turns around and signs with the Jets. But then again, that Jets defense is legit. And the weapons like Garrett Wilson, despite his, hey, we're going to win, you know, score that touchdown, and Breece Hall, who might've just ran out of gas on that run. Who knows? I mean, I think those weapons nonetheless would still entice him to maybe give it another go. Who knows? But I will say, real quick, as an aside, I do feel somewhat vindicated about my Jets pick. Not to say that they're going to win the AFC West East now, I don't think, depending on where they go with the quarterback situation. But just considering that they could still beat the Bills despite losing Rodgers after four plays, right? I think that should give me the credit of, hey, had Rodgers stayed healthy, they would have won the AFC East. But whatever. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. I think realistically, if I'm the Jets, my targets at this point are either Matthew Stafford of the Rams or Kirk Cousins of the Vikings. I think both veteran quarterbacks can be had, and they're the type of guys that the Jets should go after. I mean, the Rams, I don't know how they're looking at their roster, but to me, they're a 6-win team this year. So if I'm the Rams, and if I can pry like a first-round pick away from the Jets, because, you know, they owe their second-rounder to the Packers since Aaron Rodgers couldn't make it through four plays, you know, I would do it. I would do it because I feel like the Rams are they're not in a state of going for it right now. They're in a state of rebuilding on the fly. And where is Matt Stafford going to be like next year, the year after, right? So if I can get some assets for Stafford and clear him off the books, I may just do that. Same goes with the Vikings. I mean, they're as bad as I thought they would be. Speaking of what you thought was going to happen, where what didn't happen. Vikings, dude, they lost to Baker Mayfield Bucks in their home opener. Come on. And they're not re-signing Cousins after the year, so I think he should be available for trades. But you mentioned Sam Darnold, how interesting would that be if the Jets traded for him to bring him back for his redemption story? Or another interesting story would be to sign Carson Wentz. And then I'm sure that's a guy that probably would agree to Peyton Manning's film crew following him for season two of the Netflix quarterback series. Because how cool would that be?
That would be cool.
But real quick, did you hear about that random dude on Twitter who predicted that Rodgers was going to tear his Achilles hours before the game even started?
No.
Yeah, some guy named David Zaslav, who goes by Daddy Zaslav, posted a message that read, quote, Aaron Rodgers is going to tear his Achilles on a rain-drenched MetLife turf in 2.5 hours. That was his first tweet. And then he followed that up with, 40-year-old quarterback in rain-drenched turf against the best team in football? What could go wrong? Am I right? Right? But the strange thing is that both tweets have since been removed and the account has vanished. So whoever the heck that was who made that prediction, I don't know. But I'm wondering if that was the head writer for that NFL script this year. I don't know how you could have predicted that.
Let's swing around to some other games starting. I mean, it was a crazy week one. Let's start on Thursday as Dan Campbell, the Fighting Dan Campbells, take out the Kansas City Chiefs. Here's my I am wrong with a hedge, and that is I was wrong about Dan Campbell in terms of what he can do for a team. I didn't think he was going to be formidable. I didn't think he was going to be able to coach. Now, I'll hedge by saying, as long as he doesn't talk publicly, I'm all in on Dan. I mean, he just gets more outlandish and more outlandish, and it almost takes away from his credibility when the things that he talks about, when it's like, Dan, just keep that in-house. Get your guys motivated. You've got Jared Goff playing as well as he's ever played. Amon-Ra St. Brown is a star. You know, that you got a defense that is, you know, formidable with Aiden Hutchinson. You got an offensive line that, you know, can protect and open up holes. Like, and you went into Kansas City and won a game that I don't know if many people really believe. They may have thought it and hoped it because, you know, it's the Chiefs and people are tired about the Chiefs, but they went in and won, and they're staking an early claim to, yeah, we're going to win the AFC North, especially after seeing what, you know, the Vikings did by, you know, flailing to the Bucks. Again, where was I wrong? I thought it was going to take the Bucks 2 months to get a win. I mean, I thought they were all in on the we're playing for Caleb Williams sweepstakes, and they go in and win on the road. So definitely was wrong, you know, so far about what Baker Mayfield and the Bucks could do. But Dan Campbell was, you know, boy, he's got his guys playing as hard as humanly possible.
You know who Dan Campbell is? Dan Campbell is this generation's Mike Ditka. And I told you, I am all in on the Dan Campbell crazy train this year. And the Lions did not disappoint in the season opener against the Chiefs. Sure, they were without Travis Kelce. Sure, they were out without Chris Jones. So put an asterisk if you want Mike Tirico. But the Lions still went into Kansas City and beat Patrick Mahomes. I don't care if Kadarius Toney dipped his hands in a tub of butter before the game. It's still a legit win, and they certainly look to be the class of the NFC North as far as I'm concerned.
Let's talk about rivalries real quick. You always hear about the Battle of Ohio, Cincinnati against Cleveland. You always hear about the oldest rivalry in football, Green Bay against Chicago. Joe Burrow is now 1-5 against the Cleveland Browns. And we're talking about not the Deshaun Watson, the bad Cleveland Browns for the past 2 years. And you're talking about the Bears and Packers being the oldest rival. Can you be a rival when I think it's like 23-5 over the past 28 games in favor of the Packers? Again, Aaron Rodgers led most of those against bad Chicago game. But here we go, Jordan Love. This was Chicago's opportunity to flip the script and start their own, and they did it. Not only did they not do it, they lost pathetically. So Bengals, Browns, Bucks, Bears, thoughts on either of them? And why and are they even rivalries now?
Depends on who you ask. I think if you ask old heads like us, because we have the history, then no matter what, like, you just feel the rivalry, right? Like, even though the current generation only knows of the Rams with maybe Matt Stafford and company, you know, Cooper Kupp in LA, but we go all the way back to the Jim Everett days. And so for us, for the Rams to be in LA, that's a rivalry, regardless of even when they were in St. Louis, it was still a rivalry just because of the Rams, but that was a rivalry against the Raiders, even though we don't even play the Raiders that often just because they were in Oakland and they were so good in the 70s. We were so good in the 80s. There is a rivalry. So I would think for a certain demographic, they'll always have those rivalries, whether it's the geographic thing or just a tradition, like again with the Cowboys, right? Like Niners, Cowboys, as long as they're good, right? And they're competing. If one team's really good and the other, I guess it doesn't feel like much of a rivalry just because, you know, one's going to steamroll the other. But yeah, as far as the Packers are concerned, I mean, that's what I feel I got wrong. I mean, I didn't know how good they would be, but I sort of just lumped them in with the Bears and Vikings thinking it's going to be the Lions and whatever. But I don't know. I mean, I know it's only been 1 week and it was only against the lowly Bears, but the Packers might have something. I mean, could Jordan Love be their next franchise quarterback? I mean, he looked pretty good. Actually, and he has got talent around him, right, to support him. So, you know, he could be one of those teams that every season there's always one of those surprise teams that come out of nowhere, right, and surprise.
And I don't want to give away my lock of the week, but suffice it to say, the Packers entered the conversation for, you know, consideration for lock of the week for me going into week two. Let me ask you: do you know who the last quarterback to win an opening day for the Colts was?
Andrew Luck?
Yes. Andrew Luck in his second season. The Colts haven't won an opener since 2013. And they, you know, they didn't this week. Now, they weren't expected to. They were playing the Jaguars. The Jaguars came out and looked good. But the Colts, they're... And now Richardson's kind of banged up. So, you know, the Colts are not in a very good situation, which I don't think is going to prompt Jonathan Taylor to really rush to get back, you know, fully healthy to play for that team.
Did you see how he got hurt?
No.
He ran inside. Can't have these guys running inside. I don't know why. I don't know if it was the design run. I just saw the play. He ran inside. He got banged up. He was hurt. I mean, quarterbacks aren't meant to be inside fullback type runners. I don't understand this mindset of either coaches or the players. Don't do it. Right? Like Brock Purdy. Hey, you see a little opening? Just kind of sneak out the backside, get your yards, and get down.
Let's talk about a quarterback who's been a popular discussion point on this podcast for years, Jimmy Garoppolo. Jimmy and the Raiders take on the Broncos. And I was talking to a Raider fan after the game, and I said, you got to experience a full Jimmy Garoppolo game. You got to feel.
And how did he feel about that?
Well, you know, they got the win. So he was, you know, it was a roller coaster up and down, but you had the injury scare and he had to be pulled out, which on a side note, why is Brian Hoyer the backup quarterback to Jimmy and not Aiden O'Connell?
I don't know why. I don't know why. Other than the fact that because he's the veteran, week one.
So you got the Jimmy injury scare. You got the yep. Jimmy oh no pick from the 2
in the end zone.
In the end zone.
Yep.
Then you get the Jimmy 5 for 6 leading yep. the team down for the winning touchdown, and then you get the Jimmy. We need to ice the game 3rd down and like 6 or 7. And he runs for it, scrambles, slides, spikes, first, like you and they won. So you got the whole Jimmy experience, shall we say. So I don't know if Raider fans are ready for the whole Jimmy experience, considering, you know, the ride of emotions that he brings you on. But the Raiders, the Raiders are alone in first place in the AFC West.
Well, and another Jimmy Garoppolo experience, despite having weapons like Josh Jacobs and Devontae Adams, how many points did they put up?
Yeah.
17 points.
And that was a little, again, I don't know if we miscalculated Josh McDaniels as a offensive genius guru because he had Tom Brady for so long, but you're at the 2-yard line. You have the NFL's leading rusher last year, and you run multiple pass plays. Like, why are you not giving it to Jacobs at least once? Like, do the absolute, I mean, or let Jimmy sneak it. He probably could have got in from the 1.5 yard. But, like, you don't do that. You don't run in. You have Jimmy, you know, throw incomplete. Oh, flag. Throw again, incomplete. Throw. It's like, Josh, why are you not just – why are you trying to outthink the room when you have what you have in terms of Josh Jacobs and we can run the ball? So
yeah, I don't think Josh McDaniels is a very good coach. But speaking real quickly about the Jimmy G QB sneak, I think it said a lot going back to the Niners-Steelers game that on that 4th down play when – I fully expected. Do you remember the 4th down play? Yep. I fully expected that he was just going to sneak it with Brock, just like he would do with Jimmy. I'm like, he's in shotgun? What are we doing? And he passed the ball. And it wasn't a long pass, but just the fact that Kyle's like, we're going to pass. Mm-hmm. I've got confidence in this kid. We're going to make this play. Love that. And as far as the Raider game, I mean, yes, credit to Jimmy Garoppolo and the Raiders for winning. But I could almost see the win coming for the Raiders and loss coming for the Broncos when with, I don't know how many minutes, it wasn't even that much time left in the 4th quarter. I thought the Broncos were driving and it wasn't that long of a, like, I think it was like 4th and 2, 4th and 3, maybe. I'm like, dude, go for it. And Sean Payton punted and I think never got the ball back.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm like, dude, that's why you hire an offensive, you know, minded coach. You don't do stuff like that. That's what a defensive guy does. That's what a Sean McDermott would do. That's what a Robert Saleh would do. No offense to those guys. I'm just saying, right?
Hey, Saleh went for it
in
the 4th quarter. He had 4. I thought, he's going to take the field goal. And he doesn't. He went for it and they got it. So,
well, at that point, he was desperate. He's like, dude, I got to pull out all the tricks in the bag. So, but yeah, I mean, that's the thing. That's why, honestly, I don't know how much I respect Sean Payton, because as much as people think that he's this great creative offensive mind, whatever, I don't know. I didn't see it. And I know maybe people want to throw shade on Russell Wilson that it's Wilson's fault, but I don't know if that team is so bereft of talent that they could only score, how many points they scored? 13, 16?
Yeah. Well, like let me ask you this, because
against not a very good Raider team.
What would you give me for Sean Payton being this generation's John Gruden?
Yeah, I can see that.
He essentially rode a short window for a Super Bowl win and then was basically crowned, you know, this offensive genius for so long when, in fact, you look at it, it's kind of like Rich Gannon really made Gruden what he was in terms of, maybe it was a marriage. Maybe it was Gruden calling the plays and the right quarterback at the right time. But after Gannon left, Gruden could not – like, he won with the Tampa Bay team, but almost in spite of him because the defense let in, he did nothing the rest of the way. Sean Payton wins his Super Bowl with Drew Brees, an all-time great – and basically rides Brees for the next decade as Brees puts up more touchdowns and yards than anyone in human history. And then they never get back. I don't even think they got back to an NFC championship game. Yet everyone speaks of Sean Payton as, you know, in the same breath as, you know, the greatest of greats. And it's like, I'm not seeing it. Not saying he's not good or not, he can't do it, but it's like he won the Super Bowl and is automatically deified in terms of, you know, the halo is around him and he can do no wrong. And he never lived up to the potential after that. So we'll have to see. Not sure if I was right or wrong on this game because I thought the Rams would be bad and clearly they won. But I thought the Saints or the Seahawks would be bad, and so I was right. So somewhere I was either wrong about the Rams or I was right against the Seahawks. Not quite sure, but the Rams went up to Seattle and beat up the Seahawks without Cooper Kupp with a couple receivers who clearly were not very high on very many fantasy lists because all I've seen is make waiver claims on these two guys. Not quite sure where that sits, and the Niners are going to take on the Rams this coming Sunday down in, I was going to say SoFi, Levi South, however you want to, you know, characterize it. The Niner fans clearly traveled well to Pittsburgh, so I don't think a SoFi takeover is, again, out of the question. So Rams, Seahawks, and I know you picked the Seahawks actually to win the NFC West, so what was your take on – Did they fool you, or are the Rams good and we're not seeing it?
So I'm going to say I was wrong on the Seahawks. I don't know if I'm wrong about the Rams. We'll see. I think I was just really, really wrong on the Seahawks. I thought they were building something with these young, talented, you know, tackles on the offensive side, young, playmakers on the defensive side. With Tariq Woolen, or I don't know if he's called Tariq Woolen anymore. Maybe he's just being called Reek Woolen. I don't know. But maybe like you sort of alluded to, maybe Geno Smith was a flash in the pan. He threw for only 112 yards. Oh my God. I remember back in the day when we used to skewer Alex Smith, like, seriously, dude? Like, NFL quarterbacks need to be able to throw at least 200 or up to 200 yards in a game. 112 yards?
Gerald Burrow would have killed for 112 yards this week.
Well, we can get to that. But I know they were battered with injuries, right, along the O-line or whatnot. But like you said, the Rams aren't that formidable. You were without Cooper Kupp. And they were playing at home. That was just a real pathetic showing. And I don't really know what to make of it other than maybe I was just so wrong about – what I saw and what I thought I saw from the Seahawks last year.
Couple other games, probably one of the most exciting games of the weekend was Dolphins Chargers. I thought the Dolphins would be good. I didn't think we were going to see Tua throw for 500 yards good. But again, maybe we should have because before the injury last year, Tua was so hot. He would connect it on his completion percentage was so high. He's got Waddle and Tyreek. And, you know, again, Mike McDaniel is a really good coach. So maybe I underestimated what the Dolphins could do, or I kind of overestimated what the Chargers could do. And I'm going to say first hot seat of the year has to be Brandon Staley, as you can't be a defensive coach and give up that many yards. You know, and you can't do that because, I mean, if you're Kellen Moore, the offense, again, we talked about it last week, Kellen Moore did his job as the offensive coordinator. He's moving the ball. He's putting up points. And Staley, what are you doing? Like, you can't get out of your own way. So I don't know if you got a chance to check out those highlights or had thoughts on the Dolphins Chargers.
Yeah, I know. I saw a good portion of that game. It's a great game. Very entertaining game. Back and forth. And like you said, I mean, Tua definitely has a good handle on what Mike McDaniel wants to do with all the weapons that they have. I mean, they're super exciting, right? Just like you said, like what we saw last year, they came out of the gates just roaring until, well, I shouldn't say until they met. That had an effect. But seriously, once they play, after they lost to the Niners, I don't know if it's like the Niners gave everybody the blueprint on how to beat them or whatnot, because they were definitely not the same after playing the Niners. So it's straight. It was interesting that, you know, like we saw that they basically came out of the gates on fire like they did, and they seem unstoppable. But I did think that they would have a good team. I mean, that's, you know, yeah. I was definitely not thinking that last year was a flash in the pan, but maybe I'm just, you know me, I'm just this optimistic guy. Thought the Seahawks were going to be good. Thought the Dolphins were going to be good. But yeah, I think that the Dolphins are definitely a team that's going to, you know, they're going to be need to be reckoned with, because I feel like, you know, they're going to be able to build on what they did last year.
Two other comments I have about games, and then you can wrap it up with anything else you thought was interesting. The Commanders win. And while that's not, you know, headline making, it is, that was my survivor pick for week one. So the Commanders keep me alive for week one. And then the other of, you know, note is, of course, Mac Jones carved up the Philadelphia Eagles defense, just like it was everyone thought, right? I mean, but the Patriots end up losing. But those are the couple things that I still had on my notes sheet for around the NFL. Got anything else?
Yeah, that Eagles-Patriots game was weird. I don't know if you'd say that Mac Jones carved them up as much as, like, the Eagles got out to a 16-0 lead, and it's kind of like they sort of stopped. Like, they treated it almost like the rest of the game was kind of preseason-ish, like the intensity or whatnot. It just didn't seem like they played with as much fire or focus. The only guy, one of the main stars was the rookie Jalen Carter, right? He came up with a lot of big plays on defense, but as far as, like, and I don't know, maybe part had to do with the weather, although both teams had to play in that weather. Yeah, it was just kind of a weird game. I don't know. I mean, maybe I just don't want to give credit to Mac Jones, because I just, at least in the first half, I was just like, oh, this guy's terrible. See, I knew he's terrible. But I just felt like that, you know what? I will say the teams were the people who I felt like were going to be the dregs of the league. I'm talking about the Cardinals, the Texans, the Panthers. And I'll even throw in Daniel Jones because of the contract he signed in the offseason. I think it's clear that it's going to be a long season for Arizona, Houston, Indy, and Carolina. And they might have the fight, but they just don't have enough talent. And I'm not sure if you saw Daniel Jones' stat line, but it's not even close to being worthy of that $160 million contract he signed. They might as well just sign Colt McCoy for the minimum to do what Jones did on Sunday. And I don't know what it is, honestly, with the big money quarterbacks, all of them who signed did poorly in week one. Right? I don't, Geno Smith didn't even sign that big of a contract, but he did terribly. We talked about Daniel Jones did terribly. He's mentioned Joe Burrow did terribly. I don't think Lamar Jackson did all that well. And then, as we mentioned, Aaron Rodgers didn't really have a chance, but he didn't do anything either. It's weird how the big money quarterbacks all laid an egg week one.
I got some other notes that I wanted to run by you, because you're a man with an opinion. So one of the things that came out over the weekend was Caleb Williams' dad, the star quarterback for USC, had basically, whether it's a negotiating ploy or not, mentioned, well, we're not committed to come out for the draft, you know, this coming season. We'll have to see who has the pick. So let me ask you, is there a team, if Jerry Sue Jr. was, you know, star quarterback for – you know, USC and projected to be number one. Are there certain teams that you'd be looking at right now? And you just mentioned four that, you know, are probably in the running for that number one draft pick. Are there certain teams? Of course, nobody wants would want their kid. Everyone wants their kid to play for Kyle Shanahan, right? I mean, everyone wants their kid to play for Andy Reid. But, you know, if you're that good and you're going to go number one, inevitably you're going to a bad team. But there's bad teams, and then there's pulling in Eli Manning. I am not playing for you. And in Caleb Williams' situation, he has the leverage of he's got more years at USC. NIL deals are paying him millions of dollars, so he doesn't need the money, I guess, right away. So if you were advising Caleb, who would you be looking at right now going, no, you got, yeah, go play for that. If they draft you, yes. If they're number one seed, I'd go back to USC.
Well, the funny thing is that a lot of these bad teams already have quarterbacks, unless they're going to pull a Josh Rosen and one and done, right? The Texans just drafted CJ Stroud. The Colts just drafted Anthony Richardson. The Panthers have Bryce Young. So really the only team I'm trying to think of, who are the worst teams that don't have a quarterback, right? And I guess you could say the Cardinals are probably that team. And I think that's why the dad came out and said, hey, don't think that we're automatically coming out, because I'm guessing that was the message to the Cardinals. Like, we ain't signing with you guys. Mm-hmm. We're not going to Arizona, because that would be one of the teams that I would advise against signing with or being drafted by. I'm just trying to see what other teams are out there. I mean, I guess it's hard to say with Washington, because I think we talked about it last week where they have new ownership. We're not quite sure what their deal is. I feel like Ron Rivera is, you know, kind of on a one-year deal, kind of a lame duck situation where who knows who the coach might be there. So, yeah, we're not sure what the watch.
And I guess it's a little bit of an unfair question, because two of the teams that I would anticipate being in the running for that number one pick, if they do get the number one pick, they're probably getting a new coach, and that's the Chicago Bears and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So if you're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they're probably going, I mean, is Todd Bowles going to last a season where they go 2-15? I just don't see it. You know, so basically you're looking at the organization, just the Glazers and Tampa Bay. And then we talked about Justin Fields just does not seem to be a fit in Chicago. They're Eberflus, the head coach, and the Bears front office, they're not married to him because they didn't pick him. So could they move off of him? You know, obviously if they end up with the number one pick, you're talking about back-to-back years where they're the number one pick. I can't imagine they're picking up Justin Fields' fifth-year option. So what about Tampa Bay and Chicago? How do you view them as, I guess, organizationally? Because you don't know who the coach will be.
Yeah, that's tough. So you're saying Chicago will move off of Justin Field. They'll like trade him or something?
I mean, you have back-to-back years where you go 2 wins, 3 wins, and you got the number one pick. I would, but again,
well, you hate Justin Fields.
I
don't know if they would feel the same way.
I hate Justin Fields. I don't think he's a good quarterback, and I haven't thought he's a good quarterback.
Right. Well, let me just say this. I think you'll just have to see how the season plays out. Like, does he get hurt? Is he just take a huge step back? Does he look like Zach Wilson? I mean, yeah, I think if all those things happen, they will. But if, let's say, he looks like Cam Newton, but he just doesn't have weapons around him, or the defense just stinks, so it's like all on him. I mean, I think right now it's too early to say whether or not Chicago, but let's say they do move off. That's the thing. It's really hard to say. I guess Chicago would be a place that I would be interested in, because at least there's, you know, if they move off of Fields, they're still trying to build something, right? They have some weapons that they acquired DJ Moore. They have who's their running back again? Remind me his name, number 24.
Khalil Herbert.
Yes, Herbert. So, you know, they They should get rid of Claypool, you know, but they just have to build that defense, right? Like, they should have drafted Jalen Carter, but they didn't. But that's his thing. It's just kind of one of those deals where their cupboard won't be completely barren, but they're still a ways away. And again, it just really depends on who the head coach that they hire. Like, for example, even though we just got done saying that maybe Sean Payton is the John Gruden of this current generation of coaches, of the teams who might have a really bad season and be, you know, in the running for Caleb Williams, I wouldn't be opposed to going to Denver.
No.
Right? Just because you would think, like, okay, well, if Drew Brees signs off on Sean Payton, I would think, like, that would be good. Versus, like, again, nothing against Mike Vrabel. I think he's a good coach. But who's their OC? And, you know, whenever they have, if they have a good OC, like in Detroit, for example, Ben Johnson, I'm guessing if Detroit has a really good year, this will be the last year that he's in Detroit. So what happens to their offense when Ben Johnson leaves? Do they have another coordinator, you know, coach in waiting who'll be just as good, kind of like they did in Philadelphia? Or is it going to be one of those situations where, like with the Niners, I mean, North Turner, like Alex Smith was building momentum under the tutelage of North Turner, and then boop, North Turner goes to the Chargers. And then all of a sudden we saw what happened to Alex. So that's my main concern about Tennessee, right? If Tennessee's in the running. And then obviously with the Raiders, we just talked about how Josh McDaniels is not good. So I would not want to go there. So yeah, I mean, I would say definitely Arizona would be one I'd steer clear of. And then Denver would probably be one that I would be interested in. Chicago would be another that I would be interested in.
Got another note here to, you know, just kind of spitball. And that is, you mentioned him, Chase Claypool, who got called out, you know, publicly, you know, by multiple members of the media and, you know, online for just complete lackadaisical effort, not hustling, not running, not seemingly to show effort when, you know, he was asked to block, which led me to, boy, that is certainly not worthy of the 32nd pick in the draft, which is what the Bears had to give up last year to the Steelers to get him. So the question is anyone going to really do business with the Steelers? Because think about it. The Steelers, boy, they kept a lid on the dysfunction of Le'Veon Bell. No, but everyone, what? You're not giving him a max contract. Like, how are you letting it? And Le'Veon proved to be an incredible head case. Antonio Brown, again, this guy was on Hall of Fame receiver trajectory when he was in Pittsburgh. Everyone, nobody thought anything crazy about him until he left, you know, and then what happens? Oh, he's going to go to the Raiders and he's freezing his feet off and he's firing people and he's attacking people. He's got issues. And now Chase Claypool, right? He's with the Steelers, and the Steelers let him kind of, you know, they usher him out the door, no problem. So I got to think GMs are looking at the Steelers going, if they come calling, I need to know more information, because they are doing an outstanding job of keeping things in-house, and things don't seem to be leaking out about, you know, the, you know, some of these players who have these issues. So, yeah, that just, it popped into my head when you mentioned Chase Claypool. So,
although didn't Emmanuel Sanders come out of Pittsburgh as well?
He did.
Yeah. But not one.
But he left via free agency. So it's not that, you know, not that the Steelers tried to move him out of there, you know. But yeah. And I got the last thing I wanted to ask you about was, there was an informal poll of the most disliked fan bases in the NFL. So can you name the most disliked fan base? And where do you think the Niners fall amongst all NFL fans in terms of fan base?
I would think that the Raiders and Cowboys probably have the worst. I mean, in terms of people who may not like them. Niners are interesting because Niners take over all the stadiums on the road. So I would imagine that the Niners are up there as well, but I don't know. I don't know if there's as much venom against them as, like, say, I don't know, maybe even like the Bills fans, just because the Bills fans are so crazy. You
nailed it. The Cowboys were the most disliked fan base. Bills, number five, most disliked fan base. Raiders, number 11. So that's
interesting.
They're not as, you know, vilified as you may have think. And that might be partial to, you know, they were here. So as a Bay Area, you got a lot more, you know, clashes between Niner and Raider fans. The Niners actually came in 31st. Only the Colts were disliked less than the 49er fan base, which is a little surprising. And maybe it's because they're, and I don't know, maybe the Niners are just so genteel when they take over stadiums that they're very polite when they go. Unlike the Bills, who, you know, bring the Bills Mafia and, you know, hide your tables and chairs type of thing. So interesting, absolutely unscientific online poll led by, I think it was MGM Bet or someone. So someone online.
Or maybe there's so many Niner fans. So, maybe. You know, they're not going to vote for, you know, if there's so many Niner fans, obviously we're not voting for ourselves as the worst fan base. So who else was up there? Seahawks fans?
The top five would be the Cowboys, the Browns, the Eagles, Steelers, and Bills. I got to say, not surprised. The Browns, not surprising. Eagles, surprising. Giants were just outside the top five. Again, not really surprising. I guess the only, you know, mildly surprising one on the opposite end was the Vikings made the top 10. Who knew the fans from the Great White North were, you know, disliked around the NFL? So, yes.
Can't believe it, eh?
Can't believe it, eh? Let's move on to Lock of the Week. Just as a review, Jerry took the Ravens, win. I took the Commanders, win. So now you're putting it all on the line with?
You did a few good ones to choose from. I mean, we just talked about how the Steelers for sure are not going to win because they just got throttled by the Niners.
Yep.
But they're playing the Browns. So not sure how confident I feel about the Browns, though their defense looked pretty good this past week. But I don't think I'm going to go with the Browns. Thought about the Cowboys because they are playing the Zach Wilson led Jets. And I emphasize the Zach Wilson led Jets. So that should be a lock, but I think I'm going to save the Cowboys. As you know, I was not a fan of the Vikings and they were just as bad as I imagined. So playing against the Eagles who, kind of, even though they won, it was not a good win. I would think that the Eagles being at home would want to make things right and just really put it to the Vikings. But again, saving the Eagles. So I think the team that really needs this win and really needs to make things right are the Bills Mafia Buffalo Bills. And they're playing your Jimmy G Raiders.
Yep.
So I'm going to take the Bills because they're at home. I know it's on a short week, but they want to wash that nasty taste out of their mouth, having lost that game. And I think they're going to take it out on the Raiders.
I also was considering Philadelphia. That's the Thursday night game. So that always scares me, even though Philadelphia is at home. I was considering the Bills because if not the trendy pick, they were the most rational pick to win the AFC East. And now they've already dropped, you know, a division game. Now they're going, you know, to play the Raiders. They, you know, you would think they have to have this bounce back game. But I'm going with another team who I think has to have a bounce back game, not being the LA Chargers. The Chargers who, if they have any hope of, you know, and I mentioned it last week during our preview show. I was trying to find a reason to let the Chargers win that division. I was trying to find, you know, how can I find a way to squeak them into, you know, the AFC West division winner. And I couldn't do it, but I definitely have them as a wild card team. You're going to start hearing the statistics about if you go 0-2, your percentage of making the playoffs drops to, you know, X, Y, and Z. So, I don't know if this is a Smart pick, considering they're on the road at Tennessee. They're only a 3.5-point favorite. But I don't think Tennessee, or I know Tennessee does not have the offensive firepower that Miami does. So Brandon Staley shouldn't have to, you know, devise a defense to completely shut things down. I think Tennessee's in a little bit of disarray after Tannehill threw three interceptions this past week. They are on the how long can we last with this guy before we got to turn it over, you know, to Malik Willis or Will Levis if he's healthy type of thing. When we see what the young guys got. So I just think the Chargers need this win to have, you know, to stay relevant in the AFC West. So I'm going to take the LA Chargers to squeak out a win. And much like you were saving Dallas and Philadelphia, I don't anticipate myself using the Chargers in really, you know, locks, considering they've got to play the Chiefs. They got to play, you know, division games. So I don't see a lot of places that I'm for sure going to use the Chargers. So I might as well try and use Justin Herbert and the Chargers now. I'll take the Chargers as the lock of the week. With that, anything else before we get to final thoughts?
I'm good with final thoughts.
Final thoughts. Yes, I am as well good with final thoughts. So go ahead, Jerry, what's your final thought?
So in case you missed it, there is a bar in Milwaukee, Wisconsin called Jack's American Pub. And prior to the season, apparently, they announced a promotion for Packers fans who were pissed at Aaron Rodgers for leaving their beloved Green Bay team. And that if the Jets were to lose a game in which Rodgers started, which I didn't know that was a stipulation, by the way. I thought it was just if the Jets were to lose a game this year, that the bar would pay everyone's drink tab. So they should be clear for the rest of the year. But as far as the game on Monday night, obviously the bar's patrons felt very confident after Rodgers got hurt and ordered many rounds of beer. Well, after Xavier Gibson returned that punt for a game-winning touchdown for the Jets, the patrons had some pretty hefty bills that they needed to be paid. And all I have to say is that it serves them right, because I heard that many of them actually cheered when Rodgers got hurt. So you can't have that. That's just bad juju, bad karma. It doesn't matter what your thoughts are on the player. You can't cheer for an injury. So yeah. So good for Xavier Gibson for making those fans actually have to pay their tax.
I did hear about that, which was fun. I mean, you know, I like a fan base, and I should have kept up the screen where the Packers fit into the most liked or disliked fan bases. You know, because everyone talks about the Packers are just such, you know, such great fans that, you know, go there and they want to celebrate with brats and cheese curds with you. But apparently that doesn't translate if you cross them as your starting quarterback. Plus, I gotta think that they were feeling real good. I mean, Jordan Love looked good. You just beat the Bears, and now Rodgers is going. We're beers all night until that happens. So
So Josh Allen threw like three picks and fumbled the ball away.
Yes, good on the bar for, you know, running a promotion. Good on the bar. I'm sure the bar made a nice hefty profit that night.
But I'm sure they were sweating. Sweating to the very end.
Yeah, they're trying to figure out how do we get out of this for the rest of the year, because you know this is not.
They should cut a check to Xavier Gibson.
There you go.
Saving their bacon.
There they go. I'm going to take my final thought and talk about college football. Colorado Buffaloes and Deion Sanders are here to stay. The Buffaloes, who were predicted to win two games all year, are now 2-0 after beating their rival Matt Rhule and the Nebraska Cornhuskers. Deion Sanders' son, Shador, the quarterback, again, phenomenal day statistically. And I'm, again, I'm going to put Dion in that Dan Campbell category in terms of I'm really not going to believe it until I see it. Well, I've seen it. Dion has, you know, Dion plays within the rules right up to the edge. Like we talked about last time, he turned a roster over of 76 new guys, all from the transfer portal. Coaches and administrations were upset about this is not how you build a program. This is not what you know recruiting was for. This is not what the transfer portal was built for. But you know, Dion played within the rules and got all his guys that he wanted from Jackson State. He recruited the heck out of the hotbeds of Texas and California, and now he's got he's off to a 2-0 start. Big game coming up in 2 weeks when they play Oregon. That's going to be a are you for real game for the Buffaloes. But 2 weeks in, Colorado has got to be the hottest story, as both ESPN and Fox will be broadcasting live from Boulder, Colorado. Neither media entity is broadcasting the game, but they are going for the hype of Colorado. So, and they're playing Colorado State. Colorado should be 3-0 come Saturday afternoon. And props to Deion Sanders for doing what he always said he thought he could do, and that's be a head coach. He always talked about how he wants to coach, but he's not going the I'm going to be a position coach and I'm going to be a head coach. I'm going to run a program. And he did it by going to a historically black university in Jackson State, and then did phenomenal there. He's now at the University of Colorado. How long will he be there if he continues, to climb up this? I got to think the biggest of universities, the Ohio States, the Florida States, the Texas, the Alabamas, anyone in the SEC has got to be keeping an eye on Deion Sanders, thinking we have donors who will buy him out. And if he has the type of, season that he started off to, we might have to make a run at him. Now, Shador won't be able to make the second transfer, so you won't be able to take him, but he might not have to. If Shador continues to play like he is, he's going to be an NFL draft prospect come next April. So exciting to see a new team on the national horizon, the Colorado Buffaloes. It's been a long time since the Michael Westbrooks and Rashawn Salams had Colorado playing, this well. So Colorado State this Saturday, I might not be glued to my seat for that game, but I'll be keeping an eye on it. So
let me ask you two questions. Well, first of all, I feel like I've seen those, HBCU bowl games, like at the end of the year, just to see, okay, how much talent is there at that level? And we don't see many of them drafted. I didn't really notice, you could see the difference in caliber of talent.
Yep.
But yet at the same time, I don't know how many players he brought from Jackson State to Colorado and how this has all sort of just worked? So that's my first question. And my second question is, now granted, I know Alabama just lost to Texas, so I'll just throw both those schools out there. If Colorado were to play Texas or Alabama, how do you think they would do? So first question is about the talent. Like what's the deal with the talent from Jackson State? And the second is how would they do if, no offense to Nebraska or even TCU, but if they actually win, or even Oregon, but just going up against the powerhouses of the SEC.
Give me one second here. It looks like 10 players, just as a quick look through the transfer portal, 10 players from Jackson State transferred to Colorado this season.
And how many of them start?
That I do not know. That I will have to
get. That's a lot. That's still a lot of players, right? Take from the school.
Yeah, so I'll have to have the research department check in on that. How would they do against a big-time program? I don't know. We'll see, because they have to play – some of these current Pac-12 schools, like I said, like Oregon.
But do you consider Oregon a top tier program? I mean, like, if you think of the Pac-12 football programs, I mean, there's a reason why USC is leaving. I mean, the way they thumped Stanford and the way that they, you know, I mean, well, I guess you could say Oregon might give them a run for their money, but that's – but that – I don't know. I just feel like other than USC, I'm not sure how much – how much top-tier talent you're really seeing on these
guys. Are you not paying attention to the college football standings? As Pac-12 has 8 ranked teams. So you're talking about Washington at 8, Utah at 12, Oregon at 13, Oregon State at 16. So you're talking about, you know, 4 of the top 16 teams reside in the Pac-12. So I don't know. I mean, Are they legit? I gotta think that makes them a legitimate top tier talent. Are they top 5 talent? No, they're not Georgia. They're not, you know, Texas or Michigan. But you know who is? You know, so oh, and I take it back. I forgot. I didn't even see USC. So 5 of the top 16. So you're talking about a third of the rankings, you know, reside in the Pac-12, which is why I think Colorado is going to, you know, when they play Colorado State, then they play Oregon, they play SC, then they play, they got Arizona State, Stanford, and then they play UCLA. So 3 of their next 6 games, you know, are against ranked opponents, including USC. So not that I expect them to beat USC, because Caleb Williams does seem to be that good, but, you know, do they go in and lose 42-35? You know, I mean, that would be an outstanding accomplishment for Colorado. Dude, can they go into Eugene, Oregon? I mean, if you go into Eugene and win, that's a big – again, this is a team that was supposed to win 2 games all year. So now you're talking about going in and playing, you know, the number 13 team in the country and coming out with a win. I think those are going to be tests for Colorado, no doubt. And they could end the season at like 8-4. Right. I mean, the hype train could come to a screeching halt against some of these teams, you know, but that would still earn them a, you know, halfway decent bowl bid. It's going to certainly, you know, earn Colorado a lot of recognition. And I think it's going to earn them enough, you know, hype and momentum entering the Big 12 next season, you know, as if not the favorite, you know, at least, you know, in consideration. So. We'll see what Colorado's all about. They do have tests on their schedule, I should. So is my point.
I'm sure we will see, because your final thought segments have really turned into the Colorado football bulletin.
Oh, I got to tell you, like, I am all about praising the biggest surprises out there. And, you know, that they have been for these past 2 weeks. So we'll probably pack Colorado away at least until after the Oregon game. You know, we'll see what happens after that. Because I did have a number of possible final thoughts, everything from Major League Baseball to the world of Netflix and entertainment, but I'll save those, as those will be evergreen. So anyways, for Jerry, I'm Todd. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Niner Guys. Niners, Rams in SoFi this Sunday, 1 o'clock game. We will be back with you early next week to break it down in what hopes to be a 2-0 start for the San Francisco 49ers. So. Until then, we'll see you next week. Good night.